Greetings and welcome to Love and Justice. I'm Kyle Olson. Love and Justice is a podcast that I created to help find justice for my friend, Ashley Love, who was murdered more than 12 years ago. There is so much to get into about this case, and the podcast covers it all in detail. But with all cold cases, you never know when something will suddenly change. New evidence could come to light, or someone may even confess. This could certainly be true for Ashley's case, especially after all the avenues that we've explored on this podcast. But I wanted to make sure that there was an easy way to get all of the most important pieces of the story for Ashley's case all in one single place. My hope is that it could help people share Ashley's story even more, and hopefully reach someone who knows what happened to her. If more information is made available and we make another episode, we'll be sure to add the highlights from it to the end of this episode. But for now, join me as I walk through all of the episodes we've made so far, right here on Love and Justice. This is a podcast about my friend, Ashley Love. On October 6, 2009, an intruder broke into Ashley's family home, walked upstairs to her bedroom, and killed 19-year-old Ashley while she laid in her own bed. No suspects have been arrested, and no justice has been served. More than 12 years have passed since she was killed, and this case is still cold. You might have a lot of questions swirling through your head right now. How did this happen? How has the killer not yet been caught? On this podcast, we will be taking a deep dive into the life of Ashley Love by talking to those that knew her best. We will hear from Ashley's parents, siblings, best friends, colleagues, classmates, and more. Together, we will paint a portrait of who Ashley was and share the full story, digging up all of the theories that we can possibly find in this case and consider why such violent acts like this continue to remain unsolved. But before we can do any of that, we have to take a step back and set the table, so to speak. A criminal case isn't simply one act. It's a complete story. So let's start at the very beginning. Did you have that one best friend growing up? That friend you could do anything with, who would always say yes to your crazy and goofy ideas? For me, that friend was Anthony Love. Anthony and I met on a student ambassador trip to Australia when we were just 12 years old. I remember when we landed in Sydney, we grabbed our bags and we went to the hotel where we settled in. We were two kids from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who, by luck of the draw, got paired in a room together on the other side of the world. I asked Anthony if he wanted to take a walk around the city, and he agreed. For the rest of that trip, we were inseparable. We threw boomerangs together, we cuddled koalas together, and we even went snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef together. We came back from that trip to Australia eager to stay in touch and see each other often, which was sometimes tricky since Anthony lived on the opposite side of Milwaukee from me. But for the next few years, I spent more time at Anthony's house than I did my own. Anthony had two younger siblings, Ashley and Alex, and they were just as fun to be around as Anthony. Alex was in kindergarten when I first met him. He loved sports and was super passionate about baseball. Ashley was Anthony's only sister and was just 2 years younger than us. She had a laugh that was so contagious.
When I think about Ashley, the thing that comes to mind first is happy. She just loved life. Kind, loving, respectful, and loyal. She could bring out the goodness in a person. Every single person says she had the most beautiful smile.
The Love family hasn't been able to get the full story out there. They are subject to primetime, ratings-grabbing media antics and have no control over how the media ultimately puts the story out there. On one hand, you need the media to get your story out there so that you can reach more people and expand your search for justice. On the other hand, the media is notorious for not always getting their facts straight or only showing one sensationalized part of the story. And this is exactly why I wanted to embark on making a podcast. I wanted to share the full story instead of just a quick 2-minute headline-grabbing news story once a year. Ashley's story deserves to be told in its entirety.
This is her story. I totally believe that. I really do. And yes, this is for Ashley. This is one of the last thing on this earth we all can do for her.
One of my good friends in Los Angeles is a woman by the name of Noelle. She has cast roles for many different types of shows, including criminal justice shows, where Hollywood producers hire real investigators to come in and take a crack at cold cases. Noelle recently reached out to me because she thought of somebody who could help us out and give us the advice and expertise that we have been looking for.
I cannot stop thinking about our podcast. I can't stop thinking about Ashley and the case. And today it hit me. We need an expert. We need a detective.
I could not agree more. I think this has been literally one of my biggest dreams since the very start. When we first started talking about this, this is something that like has gone on the vision board of we need somebody that can come in, that has the experience, that has the years, and that knows how to handle a cold case. But I think my sticking point is just finding somebody with that experience that's willing to help us, that has the time. So unless you know somebody who's got the time and the experience, I don't know where to go.
Kyle, I agree. We knew this was never going to be easy, but lucky for us, I know just the guy.
Really? That's incredible. Wait. You can't just leave me hanging here. You have to tell me more.
Special Agent Sean Smith.
Hello, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, Kyle?
Hey, it's good to hear you. I'm so happy and grateful that I'm able to be able to spend some time with you today and chat. I'd like to start with a bit of a general question just to kind of get things kicked off here. Why is justice in a case like this so important? It's been 10 years since Ashley was murdered, and there are still no answers and not even any promising leads. So why does justice even matter?
Because Ashley Love deserves justice. The reality is that you're dealing with a human being. You're dealing with somebody's loved one. I don't care if you are a politician, a doctor, or a street prostitute. Somebody loves you. Somebody out there loves you, okay? Nobody deserves to be murdered in the way that we see people get murdered. I will put just as much effort towards that prostitute that was murdered as I would towards that doctor that got murdered, because they have family. They have loved ones. Nobody deserves to be murdered the way that we see things happen out here. Nobody. Having hope that at some point in time that the case will be resolved is extremely important. On the other hand, you cannot let it dictate your life. You can't let it control everything about you. I can assure you that your loved one would want you to go on living. You can't be consumed and die from living because of what's already happened. We can't bring that loved one back. What we can do is find answers. I don't subscribe to the word closure. The fact is that we can resolve cases, we can solve cases with a lot of work, with a lot of teamwork, with a lot of people coming forward that know things, that have been afraid to talk for whatever reason, have been hesitant to talk. They can come forward. We can resolve these cases.
Yeah.
But you never as a family member, and we'll use Tammy as an example.
Sure.
She will never truly find closure. You can't heal that wound, that empty place in her heart where she's lost a daughter. Mm-hmm. We can certainly give her answers. I just don't believe that closure is the right word for that.
All right, let's bring Tammy on the line now, shall we? Hello, Tammy.
Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Sean. It's nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you, ma'am.
To kick things off, I'd like to start by talking about that night. I think it's an important step for Sean so that he can start piecing together what happened. At approximately 2 a.m., an armed intruder, or intruders, broke into the Love's residence from the side door of the house near the garage. The side door leads into a kitchen, which connects to the hallway that leads to a stairwell. Based on the evidence found at the scene, it's believed that a crowbar was used to break the lock and gain entry into the house. To the best of our knowledge, the intruder or intruders immediately made their way to the second floor of the Love house, which is where Ashley's bedroom was located. Once the intruder or intruders made their way into Ashley's attic bedroom, they shot her point blank in the face with a shotgun while she lay in her bed. After the shot was fired, Tammy recalls being jolted out of her sleep, but she didn't know what had woken her. Tammy alleges that she heard footsteps from outside the door as if somebody was running down the stairs from Ashley's room. Tammy got out of bed to investigate the noise, and when she opened her bedroom door, a masked intruder was standing in front of her with a shotgun in hand. Scared for her life, Tammy immediately thought that the family was being robbed. She started to scream and told the masked intruder, "Take whatever you want. Just please don't hurt us." The intruder paused for only a few moments before running out the side door of the house, the same door that was used to gain entry into the house. Still in shock, Tammy screamed for her husband, Joe, who was still in bed. Tammy told Joe to go upstairs and check on Ashley. When Joe entered Ashley's bedroom, Joe discovered Ashley lifeless in her bed.
I remember you up there screaming, like, who would do this? Who would do that?
I remember. Oh, yeah. When I went up to look, yeah.
Because I remember yelling, they took her. They took Ashley. I think they took Ashley. I remember, even though I had already been up and I saw what I saw.
And then I went up and I could smell the gunpowder or whatever. You could smell it. And then I just went up and it was still kind of dark. So I'm like leaning over her body and I was like, oh my God, it's like, who could do something like this? It's like, go on.
Tammy dialed 911 and handed the phone to Joe so that he could talk to the police. Tammy was speechless. While all of this was happening, Anthony, who was in the basement sleeping, awoke to chaos in the house. He came upstairs to join the family, and within minutes, the Milwaukee Police Department arrived on scene. The Love family struggles to remember some details of this gruesome evening because much of the night was a blur. There are, however, a few vivid details that stand out to everyone from that tragic evening.
I was in the bedroom with the boys because they were taking the body out, and Tammy was outside with the police talking to them. They separated us all into separate rooms. Alex, 11 years old, in the one room, because they're obviously questioning us all separately. But then after they had questioned us all, I was like, well, can't Alex come in here? He's only 11. So they let him come and sit by me in the house. Basically, we sat in the living room, me and him. Anthony's in a separate room by himself. And then that's when they said, oh, we're going to bring the body down. And so they moved me and Alex into the room that Anthony was in, shut the door. And I just broke down and, crying in front of Alex and Anthony. Find myself saying, oh, I'm sorry, just basically broke down right in front of them. I just remember needing to tell my family, and how I had to give the phone to Tim to tell Beth because I couldn't even say it. It's like, Beth's like, what's going on? What's going on? And I'm like, you know, I couldn't say it.
The police found no discrepancies in any of the Love's family stories or timelines as to when the murder happened and when 911 phone calls were made. The Love family, which includes Tammy, Joe, Anthony, and Alex, went through intense, thorough investigations and were completely cleared by the Milwaukee Police Department. Tammy firmly believes that the intruder she saw leaving the house had an accomplice. She vaguely recalls looking out of a window and seeing somebody else running. It is possible that when the intruder, or intruder and accomplice, left the Love house, they went through the backyard, which ultimately led to a creek. The creek ran behind the houses on 64th Street and ultimately led to a footbridge where pedestrians could cross and meet at the street. To date, investigators have not ruled out the possibility of an accomplice. It should also be noted that there were rumors in the neighborhood on the night that this happened that the Milwaukee Police Department brought dogs down to the creek in an attempt to follow the scent. MPD has not confirmed or denied this detail of the investigation. On the night of the murder, nothing was taken from the Love household, which leads investigators to quickly discount burglary as a motive. Though the intruder wore a bandana that concealed the lower half of his face, Tammy described him as a Hispanic male, approximately 20 years of age, with an average height and build. The intruder had short, spiked black hair and wore a dark, zippered sweater or jacket. So, Sean, as you hear all the details about this case and you look at the limited amount of facts that are available, what goes through your mind?
The interesting part to me, the part that kind of stands out, is somebody targeted Ashley. She was not a random victim. Somebody came in that house looking for her. And apparently they knew right where she was at. So that tells me that somebody knows her. Somebody knew who they were going after. So somebody knew right where she was at. The big question here is going to have a lot to do with what we can find out about Ashley and her background and who she knew. Who did she cross? What happened here? Mm-hmm. Somebody knew the layout. Somebody knew exactly where Ashley slept, where she was at when they came in that house.
I also believe that another reason that this case wasn't random is because of how Ashley was killed. It's brutal to say it out loud, but she was killed ultimately by a gunshot to the face from a shotgun. To me, that doesn't feel random.
That's very personal. Very personal. The fact that she shot in the face is significant to me. That's a personal thing there.
I agree. Now, talk to me a little bit about the evidence. You know, we live in this day and age where we want to watch these shows like CSI that make the process of investigating a crime scene seem so much more glamorous than I imagine it really is. I think a lot of people, when they first heard about this case, said, well, surely somebody got fingerprints or some other sort of evidence, right? Yet here we are, we still have no strong leads. And I don't know what evidence the Milwaukee Police Department collected. I imagine they collected something. But is it possible that the evidence they did collect was just unhelpful or, plainly put, bad evidence?
I believe in this day and age, every case is going to have something. Here's the thing, Kyle. We don't truly know what they have at this point, right?
Well, here's where I'd like to bring in Tammy and get it straight from the source. Tammy, what do you know about the evidence that was taken after this happened? What evidence have you received back since Ashley was taken?
Nothing, absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Not one thing.
Nope.
Wow.
Joe and I are afraid that they lost that or they did something with it. That I can't get it out of my head. I even called them up and asked them. I said, I just want to see it. I want to make sure you have it. No, it's in the evidence. It's locked in and nobody can get in there. I said, I just want to see it to make sure you didn't lose it. It's hard for me to even know what they all took. I know they got her computer, her wallet. I know that. But what else? I don't. I have no idea. But there's pictures on there.
Pictures of her?
Of Ashley and other stuff. And I really wanted those pictures because the one detective told me, he's like, well, I'm going to make sure I get you a disc of that. I never got it.
Really?
Yeah, I remember that because I'm like, well, there's pictures of her and her brothers, you know, and yeah.
Sean, what do you make of this? I think Tammy understands that evidence is important, right? And you want to be able to help the police department. You want to be able to give this evidence over because it could potentially get you closer to finding justice. But on the other side, Tammy's been here for over 10 years and hasn't gotten back an iPad or I think at some point, Tammy, you even told me that you haven't even seen Ashley's driver's license, right?
Yeah, no. Nope, it's in her wallet. Nope, I haven't got that back.
Well, let me say this. I don't see anything wrong with them burning any photographs onto a disc so that the family can have it. There's no real issue in my mind in parsing that out, documenting this is what we had, make copies, photograph it, do whatever you need to do. But, you know, I don't see a problem with letting the family have back certain items. As long as they're items that would not be probative or important to your case.
Especially when they tell me, I'm going to burn a disc for you and give it to you, and then I get nothing.
I can understand there may be things on there that family doesn't need to see that may be important to the investigation. But simple photographs, those are memories.
Yeah.
Those are visual memories that you should be able to get back and look at. And hold on to. You know, there may be a lot of stuff on there that really, you know, not that important to you. But with modern day technology, they should be able to go through and separate fairly easily what you can have versus, we need to hold on to this, or we don't need to release this information. Now, witness-wise, people that are related or friends with Ashley Love, should we be going back now and re-interviewing those people? Absolutely. We should go back and talk to every single one of them. Everybody.
Good luck with that, because some of them won't.
You have to know everything you can possibly know about your victim. Everything. Every detail. I don't care how uncomfortable it is. You have to find out everything you can about Ashley. What I have found is that many times someone that is a witness in the beginning or a potential witness in the beginning, they may not want to get involved. They may be afraid to get involved. They may have skin in the game, so to speak. There can be a lot of reasons why somebody won't tell you everything. I don't want to be critical of Milwaukee, and I'm not going to be political of Milwaukee PD. They've missed something, okay? Generally, you miss something, and that's why that case is unresolved. If I'm missing something, I find me somebody else in the unit and say, hey, please, look over this case. I'll sit down with you and go over it, or you go over it by yourself and tell me what I'm missing. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not missing anything. Well, obviously you are. No offense, but obviously you are.
Talking with Sean was an eye-opening experience. He told us about FOIA requests and how important they can be in helping to obtain case files. After our talk with Sean, I worked with our team here, and we sent out a lot of requests. We sent 3 requests directly to the Milwaukee Police Department asking for the case files. We told them that we had partnered with Sean and that we wanted him to take a look at the files to see if he could help. We also sent out 18 FOIA requests to local, state, and federal agencies, all in the interest of getting any information back. And as if that wasn't enough, we also sent out 30 formal written requests for the case files. Many of our requests actually received a letter back informing us of that agency's decision. But here's the punchline. Every single request was denied. Now that all of our requests for files have been denied, if we are going to figure out what happened to Ashley Love, we really have to know who Ashley Love was. In the criminal justice world, this is known as victimology, and it is considered the bedrock of any investigation. We may not have the case files or any evidence that we can look at, but we do have access to a whole lot of people that can help us understand Ashley's victimology. Who was Ashley Love? To find this out, we are going to talk with some of the people who knew her. Some knew Ashley on a deep, intimate level, while others only knew a part of her. Some were friends, family members, coworkers, and even classmates. Ashley had graduated high school and turned 19 the summer before she was taken from us. She was only still a teenager. Ashley was blessed to have many friends in her life, and each of those friends took something different away from their relationship with Ashley.
When I think of Ashley, I almost think of like having a second daughter. I'd say Ashley was very warm-hearted. She was very sweet, always smiling. Everybody in the family just adored her because she was so sweet and nice to everybody.
Ashley was strong. Ashley was a strong person. She was very mature for her age. You know, she just seemed years and years older from the way she acted and carried herself.
Ashley was somebody that when I first met her, you could just see the fire in her eyes that she wanted to succeed with her life, and she cared most deeply about her family and how other people were doing.
Ashley was like a breath of fresh air. Like, you could tell when she walked into the room, she just had something about her that just brightened up your day.
Ashley was a very bright, fun, loving type of person. She was never scared to do anything.
I would describe Ashley Love as being someone who really wanted to keep to themselves. Wasn't very out there and very loud, just, you know, more on the quiet side of things.
There's one person who knew Ashley better than almost anyone else, and that was Ashley's best friend, Kayla. Kayla and Ashley were inseparable. They were the best of friends by every definition. The type of best friends that you see in the movies where they share the same pair of jeans or create secret handshakes. You know, two peas in a pod. Kayla has declined to comment on the podcast. I understand and respect Kayla's decision not to participate, and I ask that others respect that decision as well. However, in lieu of Kayla, today I have invited someone else who was also very close to Ashley, Austin Geiger, who actually was Kayla's ex-boyfriend. Did the police come to Arby's on the day Ashley was actually killed?
At first, when the detectives came to us, we were all at work, and they came and they pulled each one of us aside for a brief period and ran us through some pretty standard questions. Most of them things like, did she do drugs? Was she around drugs or guns or money? Did she know unsavory people? Was there any threats that you heard about? Was she worrying about something? Did she seem like she was sad or afraid? So it was real weird, but it seemed like it maybe could have gone a little bit further than they did. I guarantee you, I can't be the only one thinking it, that the detective work that was done was devastatingly subpar, at least in my opinion. The questions were not very thorough and pinpointed. It was kind of maybe just other slightly less general questions that they wanted to ask now that they had no other useful leads to go on. certainly, you know, from my point of view, I'm thinking that these guys should be sitting down with everybody they can, everyone that'll work with them. They should sit them down for an hour or two and hammer out every single hunch, inkling, you know, scratching of a possibility that anybody could think of in that time. That never really happened in my experience. I don't think it happened in anyone's. I don't even think Kayla spent all that much time with the detectives.
2 months after Ashley's death, investigators held a press conference with Tammy and Joe, Ashley's parents, in a plea to search for new clues, evidence, and answers. During the press conference, the investigators said that they were looking for a person of interest who might have been having a secret relationship with Ashley. They believed this person of interest may have been driving a blue pickup truck.
One night when we were, you know, drinking a couple beers together, playing some video games, talking, I think we even made a pact with each other that we were going to do whatever we could to figure this stuff out because nobody else was. And we tried. We had learned about a blue truck that may have been seen around the time of this tragedy and may have been linked to Ashley's murder. We scoured Facebook for people and pictures that looked like they had some relevance, and we found this truck that matched the description of this blue pickup truck that was parked outside, and we found the location around where that truck might be. That was some side street somewhere in Milwaukee, maybe even an alley that it may have been parked in, but I couldn't today tell you that exact location anymore. Wasn't terribly far away from the Love's address. You know, Milwaukee is not, area-wise, a very large location, a very large city. So I would say probably within, you know, 6 or 7 miles of the scene of the crime, the house, the Love house.
Okay, let me clarify. You actually went to a house near Ashley's house to try and find this blue truck.
We actually went there, saw the truck in person, and contacted these detectives about it, and were basically told to lay off and back off and stay out of it. And that's kind of when the fire inside of us died down a little bit in terms of getting at this case on our own.
The blue truck theory relates directly to the secret friend theory, which is one of the most popular theories in this entire case, because it's the only potential narrative that has really been pushed by the Milwaukee Police Department. When the secret friend theory was announced, it was a bit of a bombshell to family and friends. Tammy, who was at the press conference, didn't even know about this theory until she heard the words coming out of the lieutenant's mouth. I'll let Tammy explain this one for herself.
Whatever they said, I had no clue. I had never heard. I'm like, what are they talking about? I'm like, I didn't believe it was a secret person. No, I don't believe that.
Austin explains this further.
She was not one to be sneaking out to talk to anybody or, you know, in a hushed conversation, never anything suspicious. Ashley was largely an open book. I would say if there was anything secret about her life, it was definitely not secret to everybody. I've heard a lot of this secret character that they talk about, and it really doesn't make any sense from my angle, only because we were all so close with each other and so accepting. It's like, where would this secret person come from? Who would he be? And what kind of evidence do you have saying this was any kind of secret relationship and nobody knew about it?
Did you and Kayla ever discuss this?
Yeah, Kayla and I definitely discussed what the heck just happened and stuff like that. There were no good, understandable, justifiable leads that ever got brought up because it was just such a confusing thing that this could possibly happen to such a person. This quote-unquote secret relationship that people talk about, I personally doubt that's a real thing because her and Kayla were so tight that Kayla would have known about it. They were not a pair of friends to be holding back any information. And Ashley and Kayla were largely connected and almost joined at the hip. And I think if anybody would have any kind of memory of this actual person, she would probably be the one.
Was Ashley a big partier?
No, I could count on less than all of the fingers on one of my hands the times that we'd actually gone out and Ashley was with us, and any kind of drinking or unsavory events like that going on. It definitely wasn't a frequent thing. It was usually at, you know, a house of one of ours and just having friends over. Probably the worst spot that I ever hung out with her in terms of being a little bit unsavory, was right in her own neighborhood, just a couple blocks away.
Really? And where was that?
So, can we go off record on this for a couple minutes?
Today, we are heading to Mayfair Mall, to the famed food court where an Arby's once stood for over two decades. Brighton Olson was the head manager at the Mayfair Mall's Arby's store and was Ashley's boss. Ashley was murdered in the early hours of October 6th. The night before, she had worked at Arby's and closed the restaurant with Brighton, making Brighton one of the last people to ever see Ashley alive. So, Brighton, let's talk a little bit about Mayfair Mall, where you and Ashley ultimately were working together.
Ashley wouldn't take shit from anybody. Excuse my language. If a customer had an order wrong, even if Ashley believed that she got it right, she wouldn't take it from them. She would tell them, no, I made this right. What are you talking about? I'll make you a new one, but I'm just letting you know I did this right from what you asked, and you didn't ask for this. She wouldn't take crap from anybody. Because of that, maybe she said something that motivated somebody like, oh, you're not going to talk to me that way. She might have defended herself in a standpoint where it actually ended up making somebody angry enough to do that to her. I have received threats before. We would wonder if it was actually one of these clients that actually just got mad because they didn't get the right sandwich or not that did this.
Do you think that an angry customer really could have done something to Ashley?
Somebody probably would be stupid enough to be that mad that they had something wrong with their Arby's order, that they would follow her home. And that's what I think about all the time. I could have walked out and been right in front of this guy with that motive to go and kill her and follow them home. I remember Ashley getting threatened by somebody that they would hurt her because of an order. I remember it happening. I remember Ashley coming back and kind of laughing about how this guy literally said he would jump over the counter and punch her in the face because of whatever was wrong with his order at the time.
That's pretty wild. And it's a lot to hear when you are just kids.
People in that mall would be crazy.
Would someone really have been crazy enough to follow Ashley home for not making a beef and cheddar sandwich properly? Crazier things have happened. But Sean tells us that this lacks motive. Perhaps there was an angry customer, or perhaps an angry coworker. I've talked to numerous people about this potential theory, and not everybody wanted to be on the record. But in a nutshell, while working at Arby's, Ashley was once threatened by an employee who we are calling Rachel, who was fired for allegedly stealing. Moments after Rachel was fired on her last day of work at Arby's, she allegedly looked at Ashley and said, quote, I'm going to blow your head off. Tammy shares what she remembers hearing about this.
So this girl that worked with Ashley, she had become part of their little group for a while, would go out bowling sometimes. But she became very odd, to put it that way. She became made Ashley feel very uncomfortable. She would like take things and steal things. And then like one time I saw this myself, She claimed she had a broken leg, had a fake cast on. It would take it off, like, when she went outside. It was very odd. And Ashley was the person who, stuff like that she wouldn't put up with. If you're stealing, she's going to call you out on it. And she did. Ashley was a shift manager, so she was above her. It became known to us and to Ashley that a lot of things at Mayfair Mall Arby's started to go missing. Not huge amounts, but a little money here, maybe a little product here. And it all came back to her when she worked. The Mayfair Mall management decided that Rachel had to be let go for stealing that she was doing. So I remember Ashley telling me weeks after she had been let go that Ashley and her friends ran into her in the mall, just walking, and she said to Ashley, "I'm going to blow your effing brains out." Ashley, being Ashley, thought, oh, told me it like nonchalantly. I'm like, "Ashley, that's a threat. That needs to be, you need to report that." And of course, you know, she's like, "No, she ain't going to do nothing. It's just her talking." Well, what happened? I mean, who's to say?
Was "I'm going to blow your head off" a figure of speech? Did Rachel actually have intentions of doing any harm? It's hard to say without any further details from the Milwaukee Police Department. With the case files being unobtainable and the Milwaukee PD declining to speak further on the subject, the Rachel lead was essentially dropped without any further explanation. But believe it or not, angry customers and angry coworkers aren't the only theories that Brighton, Ashley's boss, has heard.
I know some people had the theory that it was somebody she met at a party or something like that. I'm going to keep this nameless, but I was aware of some of the co-workers being involved in some illicit drug activities at that time, too. So I don't know, you know, if that played a key into any of it. Ashley was clean as a whistle, but young kids at a party, who knows what was said or what happened or anything like that. They were all partying all the time together. There was one time that they went out and they must have been up super late. And I was there opening it, and they were coming in to close. Well, they ended up, I don't know if they went home or not ever from the party. I think they went to this party or wherever they were at after work the night before, slept most of the day because they were consuming too much Coca-Cola and Pepsi and those types of products. alcoholic drinks, more or less.
Got it. So, safe to say, there was a lot of drinking that happened at these parties.
I was never at one of those events, but my gut feeling is Ashley could have said something or not done something for somebody that was at that parties where that pissed him off, and they followed Ashley home that night that we were there and whatever. If it wasn't a customer that got mad at that, it was something that had to do with that party. And those are the only two outlooks. It was either a random customer that got mad at Ashley, or it's something or someone from the partying.
Was it just drinking that happened at these parties, or was there more going on?
Not that I'm trying to throw anybody underneath the bus. There were illicit drugs involved at those parties. Cocaine, heroin, other stuff too. So you can't tell me that somebody who was there did not have the mindset to be able to do something like that. Every single year I get an invite from Tammy to go to, you know, the memorial that they have on a yearly basis. I've never showed up. It's hard for me to face them now and bring it up, because part of me, even though I felt like I wanted to be that puzzle piece in it, I felt like I failed in that aspect, because at the end of the day, it turned into still business as usual, even though everybody just went through that emotional trauma that was closer to her. I failed in possibly not giving people time off that they needed or anything else. And I truly hope and pray that the ones that were the closest to Ashley are using that event as an emotional cornerstone to help them get through obstacles that they have in their life today. I said yes to doing this podcast because I care about the other individuals that were affected by it. And if this helps them cope through life after this event, it is my duty to continue that. And regardless of what you're going through, you can always call me or reach out to me. If there is anything, even a hunch, or even if your mind's playing tricks on you, like I said mine was with a customer, just say it, because it's something that might match up with something somebody else said. And then you have a lead. So please, just be open-minded at this point. There's nothing to be afraid of when it comes to the justice for Ashley. You don't have to be afraid.
Brighton left us all feeling inspired and motivated to talk with more of Ashley's friends. Today, we are talking with Kia, a close friend of Ashley's who was born just 23 days apart from her.
I feel like Ashley kind of took a break from the school because it's like, okay, she was a perfect straight A student. She wanted to have a break. So I feel like she was trying to still find herself and probably develop a new personality. I feel like she wanted to let loose, to start off fresh and try out different things. I feel like at the age of 19, you know, you kind of try to adventure out and try to sneak out and do things that you're not supposed to do.
Can you clarify for a second what you mean by she wanted to let loose? Are you saying that Ashley wanted to go out and experience boys, or?
Ashley definitely wanted to be someone that she wasn't. Like, imagine Superman. He has, like, his little cover-up as Clark Kent because nobody could know that he's Superman. I feel like she was trying something new. Things that were definitely different for her.
Uh-huh. And how exactly do you think she wanted to go about that?
She wanted to be, like, the bad girl. Like, I know nobody really knew this about her, but there was one point in time where she wanted to do something different for a change. I think it was an angel on her shoulder telling her not to do it. I have a friend named Mimi, and how do I want to explain this? She can talk to spirits, if you will. I was a little skeptical about it at first. I didn't really know how to really believe it. So there was a certain pendulum she has, and she has this map.
Unlike a Ouija board, which features a full alphabet, this map that Kia's friend Mimi uses only features two words, yes and no. The concept in reality is simple. Those who have these gifts can attempt to communicate with the other side through a series of yes or no questions. Mediums will read this question and await a response.
I asked Ashley, like, do you know the person who, you know, murdered you? She said yes. She knew this person. And I just end up asking, was it someone that I knew? And Ashley replied, yes. I'm trying to find in my brain, like, who it could possibly be who murdered her and that I knew. So the person that I ask about to Ashley is Tommy.
A quick note here as we begin this story. At the request of Kia, we are concealing Tommy's real name. Why do you think it could be Tommy?
5 days after she was taken from us, Tommy decides to call and see what I'm up to because he hears that I'm in town. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm in town. I'm here for Ashley's memorial. So he was like, well, maybe me and you could hang out or meet up and just talk for a little bit. So we go down this alley to meet Tommy.
An alley?
An alley.
And who chose the alley?
Tommy did.
Tommy chose the alley. Why?
I guess he said pretty much the back of his house is where he wanted to meet us. At the time, I was delusional. Like, I trust this person, you know?
Because you had grown up with Tommy, and you had no reason to essentially believe that Tommy had anything other than good intentions.
Exactly.
Got it. Understood. Okay, so you're in the alley.
Tommy gets in the car, and we're just talking. Next thing I know, like maybe not even a minute later, like maybe 30 seconds later, a guy, like I don't know who this is, but a guy runs up to the car and robs me and Missy at gunpoint.
What? Wow. And what did you end up handing over? Everything?
The guy just wanted money. And all I had was $7 on me.
And it was clear that Tommy knew this guy.
Yes. Yeah, he actually leaves like 5 seconds after the guy leaves. He was way too calm for that scenario. So I feel like me and Missy were set up by Tommy. I still do have those flashbacks of when that situation happened. I never reported to the police. I was just scared. You know, like the old saying, like in certain neighborhoods, you know, snitches get stitches. That's what I was feeling at that time.
So with this knowledge kind of in the back of your head, this is why you presented the name Tommy to Ashley during the spiritual reading, because you vividly remembered this happening the weekend of Ashley's memorial when you were in town.
I asked this question about Tommy to Ashley, and I asked her, is Tommy the person who killed you? And when I tell you that pendulum swung to yes multiple times so fast, Mimi felt a chill. I also felt a chill as well, so I'm just like, I'm in shock at that point. That's when everything kind of started adding up. I always felt it in my heart. It was never random. Nobody's about to sit here and go into a house and kill a specific person and then leave everybody else alive. This was definitely somebody who's been in that house. Because if you have been in the Love's house, Ashley's room, it was like a treasure hunt because we knew they had it upstairs, but how do you get upstairs? So in order to get through that house, you couldn't go through the front door because something was always blocking the front door. I don't know what that situation was about, but something was always there.
You're right. I remember this. It often changed, but it was either like a couch or a piano or something.
Something, yeah. But in order to get into the house, you have to go through the side door. Going through the side door, you only see a hallway that leads to the basement, or you go through the kitchen. Ashley's room used to be on the first floor, but that's when, you know, she was a kid. And then she wanted her own space, so she ended up going upstairs to the second floor. But the door to her room looked like a closet door. So that means that person has been in that house more than once and knew exactly where her room was. In certain cases, like when women reject guys, anything is possible to happen. They can either stalk you to your house, they can murder you, which is pretty sad. It's really sad. So that's what I kind of felt happened between Tommy and Ashley. She probably rejected him. He didn't take it well. And maybe he was trying to pursue her. She wasn't into him. My theory is she probably wanted to try something new, because what I mean new is Tommy was kind of a bad boy. She probably just told him, like, you know, I'm not really interested in you. So I think rejection is what, you know, made him do that.
And just so we're clear, this is more speculative than fact, right? Like, this is an educated guess based on what you heard and know and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Ashley, just to be clear, and just to confirm, Ashley never told you that Tommy was coming over.
No. Well, not just me. She didn't tell anybody.
Solving a cold case is not easy, and it's only possible if police departments and detectives have the necessary resources at their fingertips. In the middle of our season, we took a pause from the investigation to cover some of the reasons that Ashley Love's case has not yet been solved. We are taking a deep dive into the Milwaukee Police Department. We are looking at everything we know about their response to this case. And we're also taking a trip into the time machine to learn more about the MPD and their history of cold cases. Why has this case, the Ashley Love case, gone unsolved for so long? The first step in solving a problem is figuring out why it exists. And it starts here at the Milwaukee Police Department. In 2007, Nan Haggerty, while presiding over an impressive homicide clearance rate, announced her retirement as the chief of police in Milwaukee County. In a 5-paragraph memo sent to the press, Haggerty said, quote, "It has been a privilege to serve this community as a law enforcement officer for more than 30 years, and it is a distinct honor to serve as chief of police for the past 3. Nan granted no interviews when she made this announcement, but when asked why she was retiring, she simply gave the answer, "It's time." Insiders say that the reason she may have been looking to leave was because of politics, saying that then-Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett wasn't willing to put his full confidence in her, despite an incredible track record. Critics agree that Nan left quite a legacy behind. During her time, in addition to creating the Homicide Review Committee, she enacted stricter hiring policies and took charge of bad officers. She fired 45 officers and 5 recruits during her time at the department, more than any other chief in Milwaukee County history. Homicides hit a 16-year low in 2004, and the city saw active decreases in non-fatal shootings. The city moved on with ushering in a new police chief, Mr. Edward Flynn. When Chief Flynn was sworn in, he did indeed hit the ground running. The chief decided to set his sights on the Milwaukee Detective Bureau. The size of the bureau was slashed nearly 40%. Testing for detective positions came to a halt, and the list of officers who were eligible for promotions to detective were left to expire. Steve Spingola, a retired MPD detective, also joined our efforts to help better understand the difficulties with this case.
Flynn's philosophy, and this happens a lot when you get a police chief. They come in, they develop a philosophy, whether it's community policing or whether it's, you know, community engagement. But Flynn basically decided to gut the CIB, the Criminal Investigation Bureau, didn't think that detectives should be there. His goal, I guess, was to reduce crime, to prevent crime. And he thought he could do that by basically eliminating 125 to 200 detective positions. And we cautioned him about that. You got to understand that the whole department was basically rebirthed. And the younger officers didn't know what to look for when they initially got to the scenes. Evidence sometimes was destroyed or walked away. And then we had the younger detectives and a lesser number of those that couldn't investigate these cases. So, you know, the effects of Chief Flynn's decision to cut detectives basically involved more workload for less detectives. And you know as well as I do that more workload includes taking shortcuts. Let's face it, there's 8 hours in a day. You can do what you can do.
As Flynn's tenure as chief continued, the homicide cases started piling up because there were less detectives to take on the cases and no overtime being approved to handle them.
When I was there, Milwaukee, like most major cities, they prided themselves that they cleared 80% of the homicides. In my opinion, that probably meant that 60% were cleared through arrests. And then they had these other administrative clearances where people confessed and, you know, they were good for 2 or 3 homicides like Dahmer. And so they cleared a number of those homicides without actually prosecuting somebody for that. However, you know, I just checked before the show here, the homicide clearance rate in Milwaukee is now below 30%. So that's including cases that are cleared where nobody is prosecuted. And I know that their department has basically you know, been criticized that they're actually only making arrests in 20 to 23% of the actual murder cases in Milwaukee right now. Mm-hmm. And so that clearance rate has been dropping year in, year out. And I think that part of the problem is A, the inexperience of the detectives, and B, I think one of the big problems is that Milwaukee, like most major cities, citizens are not actually participating. They are our eyes and ears in these cases. You know, the old don't snitch, and they just do not want to get involved in a lot of these cases.
With all of this juggling of police chiefs and tug of wars over politics and money, is it possible that citizens don't want to get involved with these cases because they have lost trust in the MPD? They are running low on resources, manpower, and budgets. And the path to lowering homicide rates is becoming muddied and potholed with ever-changing police chiefs and their personal policies. It's also hard when you have people from outside agencies, people like our very own Sean Smith, who are willing to help this case and the city pro bono, but keep getting turned away. As our podcast started picking up more steam, we encouraged listeners to call in with their questions and thoughts on the case. Since this podcast has been released, Love and Justice has started a movement. Over the past few weeks, our tip line has been flooded with questions. Self-proclaimed couch detectives, people from all walks of life, are coming together with one common goal in mind: to find justice for Ashley Love. Today, this episode is for them. To answer questions, to provide clarity, and to help as others attempt to bring about the answers that will bring Ashley's killers to justice once and for all.
Hi, Kyle. This is Carly from California calling. I'm just calling to let you guys know I really think what you're doing in this podcast is amazing. I am calling with a question. And my question is about whether this podcast is something that can get a case reopened, and what does it take to reopen a case?
Well, they claim it's never been closed, that it's an active investigation. That's what they always tell me.
That's a really good point to make here. This case, by definition, has never been closed.
That's what they always tell me, that they're always actively looking, you know, and when someone comes in, they always question them, like, about things. It could be Ashley's case, they'll question them if they know anything. I mean, I want to believe him, Kyle, but I don't.
Hi, my name's Kelly, and I'm from Canada. Big fan of the podcast. I had a question that I've been thinking about. Was there ever a sketch made of the intruder that broke into the Love's house? Thanks.
So I talked to the police. Never. Nothing. They didn't do anything.
You've never done a sketch of the intruder?
Nope.
Do you know why that is?
I have no idea. My first thought when I think of that, they know who did it. You know, why would you not want me to do that?
Did you ever discuss, like, hey, do you think we should make a sketch of the intruder?
I'm pretty positive I did. They basically just blew it off.
Really?
Hello, this is David. Really enjoyed listening so far and interested to know if you guys have tried contacting any of Love's former neighbors. Maybe they've seen or heard something.
The first part I can answer, when we started doing this podcast, I think, Tammy, you might remember me telling you about this. We sent letters to all of the houses near your old house. And we asked everybody on behalf of the podcast, if you have anything you want to talk about, if you have anything you remember seeing, hearing, what have you, reach out to us. We'd love to talk. We'd love to kind of see what's going on.
Yeah.
And nobody reached out to us. But I remember that you told me a story not that long ago about a letter or maybe a card that you received from one of the neighbors.
Sure. So our house on the side, we had a long driveway. And the other side of that driveway was a house. And, you know, we had our cars parked in the driveway. Well, I received a letter after this happened from the man that lived next door. And in the letter, he wrote that he remembers that night two thugs were breaking into our cars. He must have seen somebody out there doing something. And he said that he thought two thugs were breaking into our cars.
And this was the night that Ashley was killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he saw two people
by
your vehicle that was parked in the driveway.
Yeah. Correct.
In the early hours of the morning before Ashley was killed.
That's what he said. He thought they were breaking into our car. You know what I mean? And
right.
There was more in the note, you know, but I can't remember because, of course, I gave it to the police. So I'm like, well, here you go. Maybe he, you know, saw something.
Oh, interesting. So you handed that card or letter yep. over to the police. And this, of course, goes right back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Hindsight, yeah. You wish you would have at least taken a picture of it, right?
Oh, I wish I would have. Oh, my God, yes.
Wow. But it's interesting that he says two people.
Exactly.
That's something I think of note here, right?
Exactly.
Today, I'm going to dive right in. Over the holidays, we received a tip on our hotline. The call came from Heather Watson, an Arby's colleague and close friend of Ashley's. Take a listen.
Hey, Kyle. Last night, I was going through my Facebook messages from around the time that all this had happened. Ashley actually sent me one at 3 a.m. on Sunday, 48 hours before she was murdered. She sent it after she attended a party. This is what her text said. Not have shit to tell ya. I'm like drunk as fuck right now, but I figured I'd let you sleep, so I'm sending you a message here, ha. Text me as soon as you fucking read this. Shit went down. Don't tell anyone. Just text me like now. I racked my brain and I can't remember what it was about or what even happened. I just think it's really crazy that it's literally 2 days before it all happened.
This is a seismic tip. And I have a lot of questions. What this tip tells me is that something may have happened in the days just before Ashley died that directly relates to why Ashley was killed. Today, I'm going to be doing a deep dive. I'm hoping to piece things together using everything we've learned about this case so far. Over the past 8 episodes, we have talked to so many of Ashley's family and friends, and now it's time to see where all of their thoughts and theories begin to overlap. Perhaps the best way to do this is by relating it all back to one central source, Ashley's known timeline. Wednesday, September 23rd, 2009, 13 days before Ashley died.
Glad that shit is over.
Ashley appears in court and must pay a fine for drinking underage at a party from just a month earlier. Later that day, at 4:27 p.m., Ashley posts again on her Facebook page.
Good girl gone bad. Text me.
This is an interesting status update, and nobody here is quite sure what to make of it. Is this a reference to a song lyric? In 2007, Rihanna released her third studio album, titled Good Girl Gone Bad. A year later, Good Girl Gone Bad Reloaded was released. The song title features lyrics that include the following lines. Trying to get enough drinks in her system. Take it to the telly and make her a victim. You better learn how to treat us right. Because once a good girl goes bad, we die forever. In May of 2009, just months before Ashley died, another song entitled Good Girls Go Bad came out by Cobra Starship. The lyrics here say, just take a bite, let me shake up your world, because one night couldn't be so wrong. I'm gonna make you lose control. She was so shy till I drove her wild. You were hanging in the corner with your 5 best friends. You heard that I was trouble, but you couldn't resist. Boy, you're dangerous. Yeah, you're that guy I'd be stupid to trust. But just one night couldn't be so wrong. You make me want to lose control. Was Ashley becoming more of a bad girl? Or was Ashley perhaps feeling the pressure to become a bad girl? Did Tammy, Ashley's mother, notice any of these changes in Ashley at home?
In the weeks leading up to Ashley's death, I don't remember any noticeable changes. She was just the same Ashley.
Saturday, October 3rd, 2009, 3 days before Ashley is killed, 2:23 p.m. After work that day, Ashley and her friends head to the haunted house in New Berlin.
So, a bunch of people are going to a haunted house thing on Saturday? Do I know the people? LOL. Are we trying to go Friday or Saturday? Saturday, there's a bunch of people going to a haunted house in New Berlin.
This haunted house in New Berlin, I do have the vaguest memories of. I do seem to remember a party after the fact, and that's probably where things went a little bit more tense between the girls, at least. If it wasn't this particular night, it was very close to the night that at this party, it was the first time that Ashley had tried pot, and Kayla was not a fan of that. Kayla was really never real comfortable about that substance in particular. And I can imagine that causing a big rift in their relationship, only because, going back to what I said about them going different ways in their post-high school career, Kayla would not have been caught dead with pot in her system, whereas Ashley seemed to be a little more liberal in terms of the things she would at least give a try to.
Sunday, October 4th, 2009, 3 a.m., just 48 hours before Ashley Love is murdered. After returning home from having a night out at the haunted house and the party afterwards, Ashley settles in at home and sends a message over Facebook to her friend, Heather Watson.
I have shit to tell ya. I'm drunk as fuck right now, but I figured I'd let you sleep, so I'm sending you a message here. But for real, text me as soon as you fucking read this. Shit went down. Don't tell anyone, just text me, like, now.
So when I first saw the message, I texted Ashley immediately because I'm being nosy and want to know what's happening when I'm not in town. But I also wanted to hear from, like, other people about what happened, too, because I knew it involved other people. So I remember talking to Ashley about her going to the haunted house and going to the parties and how she had a ton of fun. I don't really remember anything else about what was happening that day.
It's times like these that I wish I hadn't waited 13 years to start this podcast. It's no surprise here that memories have faded. Heather wishes that she had more Facebook messages that she could look back on. But sadly, when Heather responded to Ashley's Facebook message the next morning after she read it, it was via text and not via Facebook Messenger. She has no receipts of those text messages anymore. Monday, October 5th, 2009, the day before Ashley died.
I remember coming home from work and I was picking Ashley up to take her, drop her off at work before I went and got Alex from school. But as we're leaving down the end of our block, there was this parked right in the middle of the road, right at the end of our block. And there was this big SUV, and it just struck me. I even remember saying to Ashley, I'm like, that's weird. Why are they parked in the middle of the road like that? Why are all those people out there? There's people like with kids, little kids in a stroller on the outside of it. And I'm like, this is weird. So I just kept going straight. The windows were like blackened in. You couldn't see in. The tinted windows, you couldn't see in. But I saw the people on the outside. And they were Hispanic people, which was odd in our neighborhood because our neighborhood is mostly African Americans. So to me, that struck out as really weird. Even then, it struck out as odd. But then when after this happened, it hit me even more odd. Like, what are the odds of that happening? Something was off. I don't know if they're a spy. I don't know. But now I almost wonder if they weren't watching when we were leaving.
At 2:49 p.m., Ashley updates her Facebook status.
I feel like crap. Don't want to work tonight. Text me.
Ashley works a closing shift at the Mayfair Mall Arby's from 3 p.m. till 9 p.m. During Ashley's shift, Valerie calls in sick for work on Tuesday, which forces Ashley to work a double shift the next day since the store had been short-staffed.
It struck me as very odd that Valerie called in sick. I mean, at the time, it didn't, but after this occurred to Ashley, it just struck me as very odd, almost like something was being set up. That's my gut feeling.
Tuesday, October 6, 2009, 12:30 a.m., hours before Ashley Love is murdered, she posts a Facebook status.
Gotta work open to close tomorrow. Text me.
Just after midnight, Ashley starts texting with Heather, the friend who she sent the panicked post-party text to almost 48 hours earlier. Heather vividly remembers this exchange.
So I remember talking to Ashley, like, for the last time, very vividly. It was the Monday night, so it was a Monday night Packer game. I remember her texting me when she left work, saying she was going to go home and try to catch the rest of the game. And it was when Brett Favre had just played for the Vikings, and they actually beat us. She was not happy about that. I was up studying for my exams the next morning, so it was nice to have her there to, like, talk to while I was studying / trying to, like, stay awake to study. But I eventually went to bed at, like, 1 a.m. that day, and all I remember is her saying goodnight and saying, just remember, fuck Favre. That was the last thing she ever said to me.
At 1:12 a.m., Ashley is seen playing Bejeweled Blitz, a popular game on Facebook. This game entry is the last time Ashley will ever post a status on Facebook. Approximately 1 hour later, around 2:00 in the morning, Ashley Love is brutally murdered in her own bed. Here is a scenario that could have played out. It's the summer after high school. Ashley is going to parties at Valerie's house. We know that Valerie had slightly older family members, perhaps siblings or cousins, that would sometimes attend these parties. We also know that these party members were involved with many questionable activities. But at the time, perhaps Ashley did not know any of this. Perhaps Ashley was too busy just focusing on having a good time, hanging out with friends, and letting her hair down. She had worked hard to become one of the leading members of her class in high school, and now that school was done, it was time to party and experiment a little. The parties start off innocent enough, but as time goes on, more starts to happen. One drink turns into two into three, and so on. Some drugs are introduced. Ashley starts posting teases on her Facebook page, things like good girl gone bad, after she perhaps feels some peer pressure to be a part of the cool new party club. Halfway into summer, Ashley and her friends get busted. And while this is a scary moment for Ashley, who has always had a good, clean record, it also is a moment that helps her bond and become closer with those who are at the party. As a result, Ashley starts to drift away from the people that she was once close with in high school and make new friends. Friends who were outside of the Arby's friend circle that we now know would get involved with questionable activities. Activities that were so questionable that nobody wanted to talk about them on the record while sharing their tips and stories with us this entire season. But did Ashley know any of this at the time? As summer turns to fall, Ashley tries to keep relationships with old friends moving, while still traveling down a new path with her newer friends that she has been meeting at parties. Ashley may have known that her high school and Arby's friends wouldn't necessarily love that she was getting closer to people who were encouraging her to party and drink more. Was Ashley keeping this a secret in an effort to be a good friend to her close friends from childhood? Days before she is murdered, Ashley is at yet another party. She texts a friend early in the morning hours after attending, explaining that shit went down. Did Ashley turn someone down? Did Ashley see or hear something that she shouldn't have? Could this be why the next day, on the way to work, Tammy saw an SUV full of Hispanic men in their predominantly black neighborhood that were acting suspicious? Were these suspicious men getting eyes on Ashley's house and neighborhood? Tammy saw a Hispanic male fleeing from the house on the night of Ashley's murder. Could the men in the SUV have been related to the person who Tammy saw moments after her daughter was shot. Does this also explain why Valerie, who hosted the party where the, quote, shit went down, called in sick shortly thereafter? Or is this purely coincidence? Could any of this be a glimpse into the truth of what happened? This scenario uses Ashley's very own Facebook timeline to help create an understanding while piecing together the clues that we have heard all season from some of the people that knew Ashley best, like Tammy, Ashley's mother, Brighton, Ashley's boss, Austin, the boyfriend of Ashley's best friend, as well as Jessica and Heather, who were both close friends and colleagues of Ashley's. I've been asked multiple times about what I think happened to Ashley and what theories I think are most viable. Since the journey has started years ago, I have listened to so many people share their thoughts, both on and off the record. I can honestly say that I think this theory that I'm explaining here today is probably the closest to what might have happened. I say this while also understanding that this theory comes with potholes. It's extremely hard to know the exact motive behind why somebody wanted to kill Ashley. But the message that Heather received gives us very good reason to believe that something truly did happen at the party 48 hours before she was killed. Something that likely sparked a reason or a motive for someone to want to kill Ashley Love. But as I say all of this, let me be very clear here. Partying shouldn't get you killed. Underage drinking shouldn't get you killed. Turning someone down at a party shouldn't get you killed. Seeing something, hearing something, or being accidentally in the wrong place at the wrong time shouldn't get you killed. Somebody deliberately decided to take Ashley Love's life and must be held accountable. No matter what Ashley might have done in the months after high school, Ashley did not deserve this whatsoever. But until someone talks, we will never know why this horrible crime happened. Not long ago, Tammy Love and family moved away from Milwaukee and up north to a quiet cabin in the woods.
It was difficult. It was very difficult. The move was very difficult, and I feel like I'm leaving parts of Ashley behind again. Lately, I can't help but find myself feeling really exhausted. I mean, the last 13 years, it's really taken a toll, and trying to get these photos back, trying to call the police, I mean, it takes everything in me. I don't think that they really realize how much it takes in me to pick up the phone to call them, because to me, it's just... it's making it real. It's bringing it all back. And it just takes it all out of me. And then the podcast. Yes. Yes. This is a Kyle and Noel. Bless your souls, because you entered into this and you never had to. And I know that you're finding out the exhaustion of it all. It just takes its toll on you. It's heavy. It's a good thing, because it's bringing people out, talking about it, and it's getting Ashley's name back out there. But it's really taking its toll, and it just exhausts a person. It takes it all out of you.
If I'm being honest, when I started writing this episode, I had a pretty clear idea in my head on how I wanted this all to end. I wanted it to be inspiring and leave everybody with a bit of hope, a kumbaya feeling almost. But the reality is, this is not quite the kumbaya moment that I had hoped for. I wanted us to have a more successful ending. I knew that finding justice in a case like this would be a long shot, but I also thought that we could do other things to help move the needle forward. For months, we have been working closely with the Milwaukee police and our affiliates to try and finally get the long-lost photos back into Tammy Love's hands. These are precious family memories and some of the last of Ashley with her family and friends. countless experts have told us that there should be no reason that Tammy and the family cannot have these photos back. Yet, as of the recording of this episode, Tammy has still not received the pictures. We've done a lot. It's no wonder we're exhausted. I'm also exhausted because there's been even more going on behind the scenes of the podcast than most people realize. It brings me great sadness to share that Special Agent Sean Smith recently lost his fight with Lou Gehrig's disease. Sean was such a wonderful friend to all, who is an extremely gifted law enforcement officer who gave his all to serving his community right up until the day he died. He touched so many people along the way, including our very own Tammy Love.
The world lost a unique, special person when he passed. He came into our nightmare, thousands of other, hundreds of other ones too, but he came into ours, and he took this case, and he wanted to do this so bad for Ashley. The first time I spoke to him, I could just feel the passion. I could just feel the passion in his voice. He wanted to solve this case, and for this man to do this, he was such an unselfish man that stepped in to help a family that he didn't know to his dying day. Like, literally, this was his hope. He wanted this case solved. And when I found out that this dear man had passed away, my heart just, I literally, like, dropped. Like, oh, my God. And then I thought, my God, he's with Ashley.
We really have talked with everyone that we can. Some people have been truly incredible, showing real bravery in sharing their stories with us. But that said, there are a lot of people we reached out to who will not talk to us. Some of these people likely want to move on with their lives. Others may think that they don't have anything to talk about or bring to the table. But do they? We've also talked to a lot of people who all seem to have memories that fade around the same areas. It almost seems too convenient. Is it? Or is it genuinely too difficult to remember certain details all these years later? Almost every single person that we have talked to remains convinced that whoever did this to Ashley Love knew Ashley Love. But by definition, that means that there are likely many other people that knew this person too. Are people scared to mention this person by name? Are they afraid something will happen to them? I understand that people may be afraid that something might happen if they come forward with knowledge, that someone may come after you for saying or sharing something. But authorities have told us that people do not come out of the woodwork to try and hunt down folks that may still be talking about a cold case. The main reason for this is simple. They put themselves at risk by doing so. And if the case is cold, they are better off staying quiet and out of the limelight. If anybody knows a thing or two about coming forward and speaking up, it's Austin Geiger. He's become a real friend of our show, someone who we've talked to numerous times on this podcast. As we begin to wrap things up here, take a listen to his final thoughts.
It's disturbing. It's really frustrating that after all this time and all this legwork, that there's nothing concrete coming out of this at all. It doesn't add up to me. I would have thought that after talking to umpteen of her colleagues and best friends and closest relations and family, that we'd have a real good handle on what the hell happened there. And it doesn't seem like that's presenting itself. And I think it all boils down to the fact that somebody somewhere has information they don't want to be made public. And I think it's that information that's going to help solve this case. People are coming together here, but we need more people to come together. I don't think there's any other way of solving this.
Critics of our podcast have been fast to point out that we haven't talked as much about the case as they would like. Now, I don't want to spend too much time answering to critics, because we all know how that goes. But I will say that I understand and share in some of their frustration. I, too, wish that we could have talked deeper about this case at times. But that would have required more people to talk, or more access to the case files. What I have learned on this journey is that, unfortunately, when it comes to a cold case, there is only so much that one person can do alone. I feel like I can safely say now that I have done my part. I've put it all out on the line and attempted to give my all with the hopes that it will make a difference. There are so many others that have also gone above and beyond. People like Austin, Brighton, and Kia, as well as so many others that you've heard from and who have helped work with us behind the scenes since we started this podcast years ago. These incredible people remind us that we are stronger together than we are alone. I'm thankful to them all, and I know Tammy is too.
When this podcast first came out, I was afraid. I was literally afraid to listen to it because I knew what it would bring back to me, but I wasn't expecting all of what I got back. Because when I started listening and I started hearing the people that came forward to talk, some that I didn't even know knew Ashley, some that knew her very well that I know to this, still in contact to this day, my heart just filled up so much. It brought her back, like pieces of her back to me. Like I literally would be in tears, like, oh my God, like, thank you guys. Thank each and every one of you for finding the courage to come forward, for having, because you're reliving this too. Just as I do, and you do, Kyle, we all do. You relive this, and it's not easy. It's not easy to break back open that wound. And I'm hoping that by you doing that, that it's going to help you even to heal more. Because we know, and as each of you know, Ashley, she'd want you to heal. She'd want you to find your dreams and be happy. There's just not enough words and gratitude to thank each and every one of you. It just fills my heart up to know that Ashley's friends, they're making it. These murderers didn't destroy them. And years later, as the years go by, I think to myself, my God, they ought to be proud of themselves for how they've come out of this. Instead of turning to violence, which they could have very easily turned to, they stood up. They're raising their families now. They're out there. They're solid people, and I'm so happy for them.
Now, this podcast has touched a lot of people. We look at the statistics and the listenership each week, and what we're noticing is that more and more people are listening every single episode. We've become an Apple Top 100 podcast in over 10 countries, including right here in the United States of America. I think it's safe to say that this has secured Ashley's legacy in a bit of a way. You know, people aren't forgetting, and we have so many people that are rooting for us and praying for justice. And it's a really beautiful sight.
I've been saying it from the beginning, and I wanted to say here to you, Kyle, thank you for doing this, because you didn't have to do any of this stuff. And this is years in the making. I don't think people really understand. It's years. Like, you've been doing this for years.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you never had to do. But you know what a difference you're making?
Mm.
You are. And nobody's ever told you that. You are making such a difference in so many people's lives. And thank you. There's not words enough gratitude that I can say to you. I'm serious.
Tammy, thank you. It has been a real pleasure working on this. And I am so thankful for our entire team who has been working tirelessly behind the scenes for years now to help make this a reality. It really does feel like we have more momentum in this case now than ever before. And I hope that this brings us the answers that we need.
It's going around, and we've been in places where you thought, oh, this is it, this is it. But I don't know, there's something about this.
It feels different, right?
Yes. Yes, it does, definitely. As I sit here and I'm thinking about it, I can just see, like, there's so many people that want to talk, but still aren't quite there. You know, it's almost like they're afraid.
I believe there are ones out there that still so badly want to come forward and say something. They might think, oh, why should I? What does it matter? Well, I'm telling you, it does matter. Come forward. Call the hotline. Send a message in. Just let it out.
If Ashley Love were alive today, she would be around my age. We'd be celebrating her birthdays. She'd be paying off her college loans. We'd all be visiting Harry Potter World together, and so much more. When I think about cases like Ashley's, I wonder to myself, what have their friends done? What would you do if this was your friend? Would you shove it under the rug and move on? Would you go out and try and handle your own investigation? Would you hold a séance? Would you start a podcast? The fact of the matter is, this is happening more and more every day, every year. Ashley Love is only one case of over 250,000 that remain unsolved in the United States of America. It's impossible to turn on a TV and not hear about another senseless murder. But perhaps that is part of the problem. We are desensitized, and crime is normalized. Hell, crime is even celebrated sometimes. One quick look at a lineup on Netflix, and you'll find that we've sexualized killers like Ted Bundy, Joe Exotic, and Jeffrey Dahmer. We've even seen this with our own podcast. People have left reviews saying negative things because we haven't given juicy details and theories of the crime that they're used to experiencing on other podcasts and TV shows. The first step in solving any problem is recognizing that there is one. In the case of Ashley Love's murder, there's a lot of problems. There are people that won't come forward, politicians who won't reach across the aisle, and egos within the Milwaukee Police Department as well as Milwaukee County. But that's not all. There's also a serious lack of funding and physical support for the police officers and investigators who need support and staff to be able to handle these ever-increasing caseloads. Without this support, detectives don't have time to be able to go back and re-examine evidence, case files, interviews, and more in a constantly evolving landscape. What's next? For Ashley? For the police? For cold cases in Milwaukee? I'm not sure. I genuinely hope that Tammy gets the photos back from the police. This would be a great first step towards making progress in getting closer to solving this case. People have asked a lot since I started this podcast why I started a podcast in the first place. I often give a number of answers. Sometimes I say that I wanted to help find justice for my best friend's family. Other times I say that without a podcast, I feel like people won't have any way of coming forward and sharing what they know. Every once in a while, I say that I'm convinced that this podcast is maybe the only way to ever solve this case. In reality, the only way this case will ever be solved is if someone takes a leap of faith and comes forward with the truth. It has been over a decade. I hope and pray that whoever knows something has grown up and matured and will come forward to finally bring new light to this case. If you know something, it's time to come forward. If you haven't talked to the police about something you feel could be important, please make that step. If you need help, email us or call our hotline and we will gladly assist. Our hotline will continue to stay live even after this final episode is done. We need your help in keeping Ashley's memory alive. Sharing this story and this podcast can help give the Love family a fighting chance at justice. The more people who talk about this case, the better. Someone knows something, and it's time they come forward. Lastly, To each and every one of you who have listened to this podcast and shown us support, thank you from the very bottom of our hearts. We're inspired to know that you are helping us keep the faith and spread the love.
Love never dies. Never. That's why the ones who did this to Ashley, they can think all they want that they took her from all of us, but that love is never dies. She's around in different ways. I learned that there are good people out there still, that among the evil, there's so many good. People can come together. That's just awesome and inspiring. And I've learned that hope and love is real. And together, we can do anything. And I believe we will.
Love and Justice is an official podcast of Magic Lamp Productions and is recorded all over the United States of America. This episode was executive produced, directed, and hosted by me, Kyle Olson. Co-executive producer, Noel Kane. Segment producer, Jessica Solomon. Producer, Mattia Rose. Associate producer, Miranda Schmidt. Editing by Cody Crabb. Production assistant, Natalie Izquierdo. A very special thanks to Tammy, Joe, Anthony, and Alex Love. Additional special thanks to Teresa Brockman, Terry Love, and Third Wheel Podcast Studio Los Angeles. If you have clues, this is your cue to give us a call on our hotline. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and rate it 5 stars. Every single review greatly helps our exposure and increases the odds that more people will listen, which will help get this case solved. So please, rate this podcast and share it with your friends today. It only takes a quick minute. Somebody knows something. Maybe not everything, but something. Chances are that somebody is in Milwaukee right now. It could be you. There is now a cash reward of $12,000 for information provided that leads to the conviction of Ashley Love's killer or killers. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.